On Halloween night, 1977, America gathered around for a live TV event that shocked a nation. What happened was real. What you are about to see is the recently discovered master tape of what went to air that night.
With Mr.
Ladies and gentlemen, now, here's Mr. Mitch Jack Devil.
Late Night with the Devil.
Coming up, it's television's spookiest night in a special Halloween edition of Night Owls with Jack Delroy. Tonight, medium and psychic Christu demonstrates how he speaks to the dead.
You hear these voices of the dead all the time. I guess the burning question is, how the hell do you get any sleep?
Hypnotist Carmichael Haig puts the audience and yours truly in a spine-chilling trance. Then parapsychologist June Ross Mitchell introduces us to Lily, the subject of her book, Conversations with the Devil. Don't miss the television event of the year, tonight on Night Owls with Jack Delroy.
Well, good evening and welcome to Death Holler, where if you seen it, no you didn't. And if you heard it, no you didn't. I'm your host, La Irena, and with me as always is my co-host, the Reverend Dr. Death. Let's give him a round of applause. Wow, great crowd tonight. And with me also is my husband, his suspicious death does us part. Let's give him a round of applause. Man, you guys are great. This is awesome. Now, Reverend, are all teenage girls possessed or is it just hormones?
As Bobby Boucher's mama would like to say, they're all the devil.
What say you, hubby? You have a teenage daughter.
No comment.
He likes to keep it down. She might hear. So, you know, we got to be careful. Tonight, my guest and I will be reviewing the Shudder exclusive Late Night with the Devil. And I guess it's really not an exclusive. It's just a Shudder special, if you will. Is that correct?
Well, I was thinking that it was actually a Shudder exclusive on their like streaming platform, but they did release it in theaters for like a short little while before they premiered it on their channel.
Yeah, as we've seen it, we saw it the weekend it came out.
Is it on Shudder now?
It will be in another week. So this is going to be a spoiler review, and I guess this is your spoiler alert right now, because we will be releasing spoilers on this. So sit back, relax, and don't touch those dials, or we'll find you. So, movie discussion: Late Night with the Devil, 2023,
2024. It's by
That might have been when it was made, but it came out this year.
Yeah, so we're gonna say 2024. Tagline, and thankfully there were a few, unlike our last episode where there were absolutely none whatsoever. A 1970s late night talk show goes to hell in this fiendish horror thriller.
I mean, that basically is just the synopsis put as a tagline.
Pretty much, yeah. And, well, we'll get to that. But directed by Cameron Cairns. Cairns? Is that how you pronounce it? Cairns. I'm going to go Cairns. Oh, my God, they're Cairns. And Colin Cairns. Written by, and it's just the same two gentlemen, Cameron Cairns and Colin Cairns, only they swapped them to make one look.
That's how you know that you got a good independent movie, is whenever it's the same writer and director.
Yeah. Music by Roscoe James Irwin and Glenn Richards. Budget rumored to be less than $2 million from multiple sources. So no direct number, but everyone's saying less than $2 million. Reddit was kind of thrown out anywhere between $1 to $4 million. So I think it's safe to say it was a pretty low-budget film. Box office, as of what I could find today, and this was a limited release, $9.1 million. But very notably, on its third day of release, Sunday, it made $666,000. It was 666666 all the way on the Lord's Day of all days.
Yeah, well, the one thing about that is they called that number like in the middle of the day, so they waited till the ticker ran up to that exact moment, and then they reported it, which, good advertising.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not upset with that at all. Now, this is just a Death Hauler special. This isn't going to be, well, it might turn into a full episode, but hopefully not. We don't need no 2 to 3 hour episode on this with spoilers in it. So I didn't put a lot of information for the principal players. I did, obviously, for the main character, but I'm going to kind of run through these pretty quickly. And if any of you remember any of these actors and anything notable, let me know, because a lot of them, it looks like it's their main movie they've ever been in, or they haven't really been in anything. So can someone please help me with this actor's name? David Desmalch. How do you pronounce that shit?
Desmalchin, yeah.
Okay. As Jack Delroy, the host of Night Owls with Jack Delroy. We saw him in Last Voyage of the... Help this poor illiterate woman here.
Demeter.
Is it Demeter?
Yeah.
Okay, it looked too easy. The Dark Knight, he was the Joker's thug. It's like I'm just finding this shit out for the first time, but I'm not. I've seen him. He's been in so much shit. Oppenheimer, I have not watched that. I'm sure you two have.
Yes.
Okay. Dune, which I'm not sure if he's in the second one, but I know for sure he's in the first one.
I don't remember seeing him in the second one, but...
Yeah, so, and everyone is saying the first one, so it's probably just the first. The Boogeyman, I remember him in this one. We haven't discussed that movie.
He plays a pretty good part in that. He's the guy who basically sets up the curse that goes through the movie.
Yeah, and he played a good, scary-looking man. And then, well, not scary, but he was definitely terrified. There was something not right. So, and all I remember thinking when I was watching that is, why does no one believe him? But they just thought he was crazy, so whatever. And then Bird Box, which I kind of don't remember him in that.
The movie I remember him mainly from is the new Suicide Squad, the one that James Gunn did, because he plays Polka Dot Man, which is the most memorable character in the movie.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I've seen the photos. I haven't seen that one. So, and yes, I did see that. I was just trying to keep it as close to, well, I guess I shouldn't say horror because we have Oppenheimer in here, but.
That is horror. That's a real life horror.
Yeah. That's a different horror for a different season.
Yeah.
Laura Gordon as Dr. June Ross Mitchell. She's a parapsychologist and author. The only thing I could find even close to being horror related is she was in a movie from way back in the day. I want to say maybe 2015 or 2005. I just know there's a five at the end of it, called Alien Hunters. And I thought you had mentioned something about Alien Hunters today, but I could be wrong earlier. But she was also in a sci-fi series, and I don't mean sci-fi the channel, just a sci-fi style series called Hunters, and it looks pretty interesting. So she's in that currently. As for other roles,
I'm not really aware of her. I mean, I don't remember seeing her in much else.
Yeah, and her face looks familiar though. I swear she looks familiar. So I don't know. I haven't seen her in anything that I can tell. Let me see. Ian Bliss as Carmichael the Conjurer, a former magician turned skeptic. The character resembles a magician turned skeptic, James Randi. Randi was involved with a similar altercation with Australian late night host Don Lane on the Don Lane Show. So that's all they say about him. As for movies, I didn't really find anything that he's been in noteworthy anyways.
Those that actress and the actor you just mentioned are both Australian.
Yeah. Oh, and all but I want to say all but David and his co-host, but like the sidekick on the show. I think his name is Reese. I think they're the only Americans in this. Everyone else is Australian.
Really?
Yes.
That is interesting.
Was it filmed? Pretty good. Was it filmed there?
I don't have that info.
Imagine it'd be cheaper to film there.
It might be. So, next up, we got Faisal Bazzi as Christo, the psychic. I liked his character a lot in this movie. he's not really been in anything major.
Shot in Melbourne, Australia.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
There you go. That's the reason.
Yeah, if you think about it, you're funding the project in American dollars, it's going to be way cheaper to do it out there. The dollar's going to
go fuck yeah. Their dollars are way,
Their currency
is different. That's wild. Okay. Ingrid Torelli as Lily Diabo, the survivor of mass suicide. They just literally call her the survivor. They didn't say anything else like, oh, you know, the fucking possessed teenager. Because that's some worthy information. She also has a familiar face, but I have not seen her in anything. I think it's just because they have that good 70s look so well. They did so well with hair, makeup, and costume with these characters that they just literally resemble people from the past. I can't tell you who this little girl reminds me of, but she reminds me of somebody. I don't know if that is the same for you guys.
I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like really ringing a bell whenever I saw her or anything, but
you know, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I don't really just like looking at her. I mean, they all had a 70s look. That was actually one of the better things about it. But no, I mean, I'm just not getting any like other actresses or anything that she really reminded me of.
Let me see. Reese Alteri, that's the other American that I had mentioned. He was Gus McConnell, who's Jack's sidekick. Also no other movies, but I liked his character. So I think if this is his first movie, I'm hoping there's a possibility he might be in other stuff, but who knows? Nicole Chapman as Cleo James, musician. That's it. Georgina Hague as Madeline Delroy. That's Jack's deceased wife. She was in a couple horror films she was in. Well, two horror films and a TV show. Roadkill in 2010, Crawl in 2011. Reverend, I would be surprised if you didn't see these. They just the cover alone looked right up your alley.
Crawl's the one that's set in Florida, right, during the hurricanes?
No
with
idea.
The alligators?
No idea.
I'm pretty sure it is, and if that's the case, then that one I have seen, and that movie is great for, like, when bad animals go bad. That is a really good animal movie.
Awesome. Are we going to see Theta in it?
You see multiple Thetas in that
Theta
movie.
Theta and her family! Adorable.
No, it's not the one I'm thinking of. This is an Australian movie called Crawl.
Okay.
Different movie.
Yeah. She was also in Once Upon a Time. We all know one of my favorite TV shows. She played Elsa, shockingly not a villain, because for whatever reason in that show, they like to turn the good people into bad people in that show, which was awesome. Good to see them be the assholes that we know that they are. There's no way you're that bubbly and princessy all the fucking time. Let me see. Josh Kwong Tart as Leo Fisk. My fucking mouse is moving all over the place by itself right now. It's pretty fucking hilarious. It's all over the screen.
Would you say it's possessed?
It's acting like it is. I'm guessing it's the cord that's touching it. Anyways, Josh Kwong Tart as Leo Fisk, the producer of Night Owls. Also, nothing notable that he's been in, but I thought he played a great character.
Was he that sketchy guy that kept like trying to get, okay.
The scumbag.
Yeah, the one that's like, hey, we got to keep the show going. We got recruiters here.
I thought he did a great job, and he only popped in, after every fucking break that they had. So he didn't really have a big role.
I'll bring up something about those breaks later that I saw a review earlier somebody else put in, and I don't agree with it, but we'll bring it up.
Michael Ironside as the narrator, and Steve Mouzakis as Xander Diabo.
Michael Ironside was a narrator?
I totally didn't know that either. I'm glad you brought that up.
I didn't even look. At the point, I was getting nothing from the actors, at least no noteworthy roles, so I didn't even look any further beyond.
Oh, God, he's been in that stuff. Wasn't he in Scanners? Wasn't that Ironside in that?
That's like his. Well, RoboCop. He's in RoboCop. That was an amazing movie.
Anyways, synopsis. A live television broadcast in 1977 goes horribly wrong, unleashing evil into the nation's living rooms. Jack's wife is illin', Lily is just chilling, and Jack may be the villain. You don't know what he sacrificed to get here, which is another tagline.
I can assume because he's part of Bohemian Grove, and Alex Jones taught me all I need to know about that place.
Wait. Was Bohemian Grove in the movie?
That's real.
Okay.
That's
the stuff they talk about that really happens.
No. I'm not I didn't think that that was fake. I didn't think that this was some made up fantasy. I was like, that shit's real. Like, you have to be pretty dumb to think, no, they don't fucking do shit like that in Hollywood. Now, how real is the supernatural behind it? I don't know. What do you guys think?
It's debatable.
Well, I mean, they worship a big fucking statue just like they show in the movie. That's really a pagan based. I mean, you can make your assessments on what's supernatural about it or not. I think they truly believe that they are participating in something like that.
It may not be supernatural, just may be monetarily, you know, supported. And they're like, yeah, the fucking devil helped us. And like, no, it's just some evil bad person that has a lot of money. So I don't know. But that's pretty bold. So they, okay, so that's what I'm saying, though, that the place you mentioned, that is a real place, or it's just a, it's a real thing. Okay, that's pretty bold to include that in a movie, don't you think? You think that's a little dangerous?
No, because that, if you understand the history of that place, then you understand how this movie makes way more sense than you realize.
Sure. It really does.
I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just saying, would they want their name out there? Or
it doesn't matter if they want their name out there. They're like a private organization.
Yeah, that's
true. It's like,
and they've not killed Alex Jones yet over exposing them. Okay. I mean, they did make him bankrupt, but yeah, they haven't killed him. So
yeah, he snuck in back in the 90s with another guy, and they filmed all the shit they were doing.
That's fucking wild. And Alex Jones is the crazy one, huh? Okay.
Well, he does talk about an evil elf that lives at the end of the universe, so you got to take him with a grain of salt.
Fuck off! There's people that are pretending there's a fucking, that the devil is funding their lifestyle through Hollywood. Like,
well, and they might be.
And then there's Scientology, which I don't want to get us kicked off. I don't want to get our channel banned, so we're just going to, we'll redact that statement later, maybe. I don't know. Other taglines include the live television event that shocked the nation. Yeah, because this is a 1970s type deal, so they're trying to really go with that theme.
I'm gonna tell you, I like that one. It sells the faux documentary aspect of it.
Yes, mockumentary.
I'm gonna tell you right now, if you was at home watching late night TV and that shit went down like that.
Oh yeah, I'm Catholic.
Yeah,
that shit would fuck me up. I don't like that shit at all.
I walked out of a theater and a guy was actually asking me, he's like, did that stuff really happen? I was like, it's made up, dude, but they did a good job with
it. Yeah, they did a really good job. Exorcism with a twist. Really happened? With a twist. Did we like
exorcism? Yeah,
exorcism with a twist. I don't know. It's not Exorcist with a twist, so, but that's what it feels like.
What?
When you hear everyone, the exorcist ruined that word for everyone. You hear exorcism, you immediately are thinking of the exorcist.
I know, but that when I watched that movie, I didn't get any type of exorcist vibe at all.
Oh, no, it's just that's just the tagline, is all I'm saying. And then do not adjust your set.
That's a good one.
That's, yeah,
decent. It plays into the old 1970s TV aspect of it.
Yeah, where you're fucking beating the top of the TV trying to get that shit to act right. My husband still does that to like modern day shit.
It works.
Sometimes.
Sometimes electronics needs a good fucking whack, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah. You know what? Often on cars you do that shit and it fixes components.
Oh my God.
It'd blow your fucking bulbs don't work. You hit it one time, it works.
Little flick.
Window regulator doesn't work. You just fucking whack it and it starts working.
Alternator.
ECU does weird shit. You fucking unplug it, give it a whack, plug it in, it works. Fucking wild how good that works.
I believe it worked so much on those old televisions because the cathode ray tubes that was inside.
Oh,
of them.
Yeah.
I
mean,
yeah, because they had a mechanical transistor. The transistor was mechanical. It wasn't solid state. So that vacuum tube, you give a good whack and it helps that little fucking mechanical operation.
Ugh, that's so funny. Moving on to quotes. I swear that there's none yet. I mean, there was one quote and I was just like, nah, we're just not going to include quotes in this because they're just not out yet.
And really, I mean, like some of the best stuff in the movie is, it's the way it's delivered anyways. It's the, like the Christo, like, I mean, I really like the back and forth with him before. I mean, that's getting in the movie a little bit, but like before, I mean, whenever he's with the audience, cause it's clearly staged, it's clearly that bullshit where he's fishing for names.
Yes.
But, and they're even making fun of it. Cause that one guy in the audience is like, no, that I don't know anybody named that. And they're all laughing about it. And But then, like, whenever he has that one moment where his eyes roll back in his head and he delivers that one message, it's spooky enough after everything else that it set the tone after that.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job with that. Now, is Christo, like, obviously there was a stage scene, and yes, we are kind of getting into the movie, and we will get more into it here in just a moment, but is he supposed to be a legit, like, psychic or whatever he is, or was he just being used?
You know what was funny? When you first watch him, you're like, oh, this fucking phony. Mm-hmm. And as it goes on, you're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
He's not a phony. Shit.
I got the vibe that he was a phony, but then something happened and he got a real message and it fucked him up. And of course, spoilers, he dies.
You
know, after he gets the message. But I think he was totally a scammer, and then he actually got a real message.
Yeah, I think.
But the only reason it changed my mind, the only thing that changed my mind is when he talked to that mother and daughter.
That wasn't real. That was what was staged.
Oh, that was staged.
Yes, you didn't catch that?
No.
Yeah, they. How did we find out that?
I don't know if that one was staged, because that did give some credence that he had some bearing to him, because they did ask him, the cynic guy, the critic guy, he asked him, he's like, did you have anybody asking you questions before you came in? And they's like, yeah. And
yeah, they pre-screened him.
That's how he got it. That's how he got the information.
Okay.
Yeah, like when they say when you go into a psychic, if you really want a psychic that's going to, they say you have to shut down your social media. Like you have to, if you're going to go see a psychic, shut down all your social media. They can't see anything about you. No pictures, nothing. Make it like go blank. Weeks leading up to you going, don't even let them know you're coming. Shouldn't they expect you to if they're really psychic? But that's neither here nor there. And then,
I was blanking on this because I couldn't remember the fucker's name. He's clearly making fun of John Edward, that motherfucker was forever on TV.
Oh, yeah.
That did the same shit.
I forgot. Didn't he have some like weird little saying too? He would.
I don't know. I just don't know how many people tuned in. I don't know. I can't wrap my head around how many people tuned into that shit and bought it wholesale.
Stay-at-home wives that just fucking daytime television back when it was a thing. Is daytime television still a thing now?
The View's still on, so yes.
Oh, yes.
God. Isn't that hella early in the morning, though? Like, it's not. What is going on the rest of the day? What is it like being a stay-at-home?
Operas.
Oh, God. That's still a thing?
Yeah, they're still on.
Oh, my God. Telenovelas.
To answer your question, Noah, the people who are buying into that are the people who are really hurt, and the reason they're so scummy is they're playing off of their emotions.
Yes.
They're wanting resolution. Because somebody died without them saying, I love you, or they had a fight or whatever, and they want resolution that they're never going to get, and they think these people are actually going to give them that.
Yeah.
And they're playing off of that, and it's awful. I mean, it's really bad.
They say you're not supposed to answer certain questions, or you have to be careful how you answer questions, because how you answer questions is how you give away information unwillingly.
I'm pretty sure it was either the guy who wrote Sherlock Holmes or it was Houdini. One of the two made it a point in their, I think it was Houdini.
Houdini.
Made it a point in their life to go after these fuckers, mm-hmm. that played on people like this.
I think of the hundreds that he would go and he would actually point out what they were doing and kind of pulling out, you know, showing how they managed the trick or how they got the answers, or when they said somebody was possessed, two out of the hundreds, he could not figure out what they did. And so he said that they weren't like a scam.
Yeah, he did rule some of them semi-legit,
mm-hmm.
but he was always trying to communicate with his dead mother, I think, is the reason that's the reason he kept hoping that they would be legit, and he always proved that there was some kind of fuckery going on with them.
Yeah, I remember hearing that about him, and I'm like, that's so funny. The man himself who, you know, gave people all the illusion of things being not what they are, and then he's the one like, actually, you fucked that up. Let me tell you what you did wrong and how I figured it out.
And what I was thinking about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote, Sherlock Holmes, he actually was a medium that believed he could talk to people, I think. So it was the opposite for him, you know, or his wife was. And I think actually Houdini proved that Arthur Conan Doyle's wife was a fraud, and it fucking pissed the man off big time or whatever. It was a huge thing. So
fucking fight. Maybe she was just schizophrenic. Like, she probably did hear voices. boring back in those days.
they were, what do you mean it was boring? They were drinking mixtures for cough that had cocaine and laudanum and morphine. I mean, they had good shit back in those days.
Yeah, and they were doing surgery with whiskey, laudanum, and a saw, and lobotomies were starting to become fucking the hip new thing.
Oh, yeah. Like, in New York, there'd be a line around the block.
Fuck it, yeah.
You'd be waiting to get your lobotomy done at lunch break.
You know how quickly I would have had a lobotomy 3 months into our relationship? I don't think my husband would have even waited that long. I'm like, she's really? Fucking psycho.
I mean, they call it hysteria for a reason. It's linked to women.
So. You gotta go see the German specialist.
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's just roll right into movie reviews. The visuals. I'm going to, right off the bat, I loved the 1970s look. I think they hit the nail on the head, exactly what they were going for. I think all the actors they chose had a great look to them. The costume, the makeup, everything. They
picked perfectly with Das Mouch, and mm-hmm. he looks like he could have came from the 70s. I mean, yeah. The way that he is in this movie.
And everybody can change their voice and their tone and how they're using it. I think he had the perfect night show host, any kind of host voice. He could have been doing a radio show, and I think it would have been amazing.
The 4:3 ratio was good, too. When you watch this, it is not widescreen. It looks like, I mean, it's got the black bars on each side.
Oh yeah. It's supposed to. I never know shit like that. This is why.
And the cameras themselves are not high definition, because when you're watching the movie on a high def screen, it's got a little bit fuzz to the edge.
That's perfect.
Which is perfect.
Yeah. That's what you need to have. Probably was a nice little money saver for that less than $2 million budget they had too.
Well, and the fact that they it's a perfect setup for a low budget movie, because there's only one set. They don't have to change locations.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, and saving on sets is part of your cost. I mean, and they probably really just paid for their actors. And since they got a bunch of Australian actors who are not really known outside of their country, they saved a lot of money on that, too.
Yeah, more than likely. Yeah, I mean, literally, they just had to have an actual movie set as a fucking TV show set, which is not hard to do at most studios.
And they could even film their own cameras.
Oh, yeah.
As part of the, you know, the guys behind the scenes.
I didn't even think about that. Babe, what do you think about the visuals?
I like it. I feel like more and more as time goes on, that everybody tries to get away from all the technology grab. That's the reason you're getting a lot of these throwbacks movies made, but long they're executed like this, like Stranger Things, this, and a couple other movies, like they executed hella good. They put you, they pull you back into that. And not that too, but it was pretty awesome watching them show the comparison between him and Johnny Carson, competing
during sweeps week.
It was almost like, I mean, the which there wasn't a competition between Johnny Carson and Letterman. Letterman had the one with Leno or whatever, yes. But it was almost like their competition. They had to try to be the next king, you know, after Carson, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, late night. I mean, because were they on every single night?
Yes.
Wow. Yep. That's hardcore. Yeah,
Monday through Friday.
I mean, they probably recorded during the day, and then, of course, it plays at night and everything. Or were they live?
I want to say that Carson might have been live. I mean,
at least on a delay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but like, wasn't he, didn't he record in New York? So isn't that like 3 hours ahead?
No, Johnny Carson's here.
Okay.
He was in LA.
Okay.
If I remember, I thought he was.
Yeah.
So he might've recorded at 8 your all's time, but it was 11 on the Eastern.
Late. Yeah. Eastern time. So, anything else on visuals?
The only thing that's, and this is not a knock against the movie. I actually thought I loved it in a nostalgic way. The look of the monster in the movie, when you get toward the end, when it's like glitching out and like Das Mouchen's going, it looks so bad, but it's good bad. It's like whenever you're watching, I think it was, Dream Child, the Freddy 5 or whatever, or 4, it has been 5. The one where we're talking about the stop motion effects. They look cheesy as fuck, but we love them because they got that there's just something, I don't know, like charming about them. And that's what I liked about the effects in this movie with regards to the bad guy whenever it shows up later.
Or yeah.
The supernatural creature.
My daughter loved when her head split open.
Yeah, that's the scene I'm talking about. Yeah,
one of the best. Makeup was pretty good when she was possessed.
She looked pretty freaky. Yeah, it was pretty good.
And I like how she goes back to normal, and that's one of the things, like, hey, if we're faking this, how did her face look like that? Like, did you guys see that face? And he's looking at the crowd like, you guys saw that, right? Like, I'm not the only one.
We're bearing the lead. The guy who was the announcer for Jack Delroy had the worms coming out of him.
Oh, yeah.
That was a cool looking scene, and I love the mind fuck on that one. Whenever the critic guy turns around, he's like, you didn't see any of that. Go back and play the tape. And then even the audience that was watching the movie got fucked over by that, you know. That's
yeah.
the setup at least.
Yeah. That was a really good scene. And I hear that's what being hypnotized is like, is that you really do feel the things that they say that you're feeling. You're cold when they say you're cold and things like that. So yeah,
that says something about that guy, though. I mean, that is a very powerful ability he's got to mind, warp everybody in the audience except for like maybe two people, you know, because they said who didn't see it this way. And there's like two people raised their hand, you know, even like Jack Delroy saw it the same way that we were seeing it, you know.
Yeah, they say you can get hypnotized through the screen. Not today and not for me. I am not looking at that fucking. I don't think I'm easily hypnotized. I just get headaches, so. I don't know. I don't like that shit.
But yeah, those little, they're minor effects, but they were done well enough with prosthetics or whatever they used. And like, you know, a slight little bit of visual work on the splitting head to where they worked for the movie.
There's definitely some controversy we'll discuss later on in the notes in the trivia, but there was some AI controversy, so we'll go over that a little bit.
Oh, yes, I know all about that.
Yeah, so, okay, moving on to the storyline. I think we can all agree that the storyline was legit, with this man, quotation mark, sacrificed to get to where he was at.
Doesn't it hint that his wife was the sacrifice?
Oh, yeah, like, you know? She was absolutely the sacrifice.
Yeah,
but and like, then why would she be the sacrifice though? Like, he has to give up happiness to have that, or
no? You have to sacrifice something of value.
You always have to sacrifice what you love the most if you want something really bad. That's any kind of occult magic. You it's whatever you love the most has to be sacrificed in order to attain whatever it is you're trying to go after. And he loved his wife with unconditionally until he didn't. You know.
Oh yeah. So, but like, wouldn't like, don't they usually require, like, maybe I'm just overthinking this, but like blood sacrifices, not so much a, hey, you're going to watch her die slowly, you know?
I think that's worse.
It is way worse. Absolutely way worse. But like, it's what they want. Not so much, you know, seeing him suffer. You would think that they would just want him to kill her.
They get to watch him squirm and see the anguish in him as they are, you know, killing this woman. They get everything they want. I mean, you know, if we're going to the Bohemian Grove route of this, those fuckers just like people to suffer. I mean, you know, to get, you know, so that they can, you know, enjoy more of their, you know, what they do, you know, behind the scenes.
When you make that kind of money, it's not about money anything. Now it's about how much pain can you inflict. How much suffering can you put out there?
I mean, fucking look at Diddy and the stuff that's went on
that
with
is
him.
Rough.
You're having a field day with that, by the way.
The my favorite thing are the TikToks,
yes,
where it's like you're sleep paralysis, and all of a sudden Diddy breaks into your house. I love those things. He's sitting there doing the dance.
Yeah, dancing to All like About the Benjamins. Oh my god! No, he can't move. He's just sitting there like, oh fuck. So. My question then is, okay, so he has to go through this. She's suffering, but like...
He doesn't have to go through it. He chooses to go. I'm kind of curious.
He's choosing, but I want
to
know, does he know he's going through it, or does he just know his wife has cancer and he doesn't know she's a sacrifice?
I think he knows, because at the end of the movie, it's showing him bow down and take acceptance for what's going to happen.
Yeah, and then he...
I'm kind of curious, did his wife know, and was his wife on board with it?
Oh, fuck.
Because it almost seemed like she was aware.
it did almost seem like that to me. Yeah. It was almost like the from The Omen, you know how everybody was like, it's all for you, Damien. It's almost, it had a vibe like she was in the same boat. She's like, I want you to have, I know I have to die in order for you to get what you want. So I love you, so I'm dying for you, you know, which is, man, that's rough. That's awful.
Dirty.
One thing I'm going to say about the story, because this is the controversy I was mentioning earlier. Some people, or at least that one review I saw, and I don't agree with this whatsoever, said that they hated the fact that it was going to commercial breaks and the little monochrome in between segments, because he said it broke up the pacing of the movie. I don't believe that at all. No, I don't agree with
that. Not at all. That's how it fucking works.
And this was a critic, an official critic that said this, gave it a 60% and said that ruined the movie.
See, this is why no one listens to you.
You know what would have been more awesome? Like, I was kind of watching this, is if they made like a little small one season series out of it.
That'd be cool.
Because then it would, and they could have instead of playing it from a linear timeline, they could have jumped around.
Oh yeah.
Different points to kind of give you a disorientation about what the hell the storyline is. But it'd give you time to see the cult stuff and then him kind of involved with the Bohemian, and it would, and then you can do a nice little bow at the end.
Yeah, like the movie, actually they could go back into a prequel series where the movie is the bow at the end of, you know, the series. Like they set everything up, and then you might not even, which it's cool, I mean, but you might not even need the Michael Ironside introduction at that point, you know, just lead into the movie, and that's the final episode.
I think if you're going to do that, you need Mike Flanagan.
I just thought it'd be cool because you could see more of the interview interaction between the therapist and the girl, and you can get a better context of how off the rail shit's going to get.
I mean, that's an interesting take, to see more of, like, especially you could even go back and see her being rescued from that cult in California or whatever, where she was at.
Yeah. Oh, God. The guy who played, God, what is... the Steve Mouzakis, who played Xander Diabo, that was absolutely the leader of not the Satanic cult, but Church of Satan.
Oh yeah, you're not talking about like Aleister Crowley or anything like that.
He
right?
looked like okay. Aleister Crowley. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but like I don't agree with that assessment. Going back to that, because I mean, like, I love the cutaways to the commercials because it gave you enough time to kind of like, you just, they always had some kind of major revelation right before the commercial break, and it gave you time to process it slightly while you were seeing like Dasmalchian like freaking out behind the scenes. And I thought it added to the movie.
Absolutely. And this is fucking found footage.
It's not found. It's a TV owns the footage. They didn't find this shit in a house in the middle of nowhere.
No, I know that. That's what the story of it, though. It's faux found footage, if you will.
Yeah, it's in the frame of.
It's found very footage. Blair Witch. Let's just put it that way.
It's so the closest thing to it is, honestly, and I've recommended this to you all before, is the WNUF Halloween special Halloween event, because it's the same concept in that movie. You're watching a late night, you know, news broadcast actually, and it keeps cutting to this guy who is basically a faux, it's set in the 80s, a faux, Geraldo. I mean, he's even got the big mustache and everything.
Geraldo.
And he's going into a haunted house to get, you know, on Halloween night to, you know, summon some spirits with, like, you know, and all this stuff. And then bad shit happens and you're watching it, and it's like it's a found tape that they, you know, pulled from the records, and it's the same kind of setup.
Oh, that's based off a true story. You've heard about that, right? Have you? I'm serious. Have you heard about Geraldo Rivera going and spending the night in a haunted place and getting fucked up so bad? Like he like
no
left.
Way.
They did. There's no found footage. There's no physical evidence. He's like, I will fucking never do this again. He was pissed after the whole ordeal.
That might have been what it was based off of.
Yeah, it has to be. That. And it was Geraldo Rivera. And like he, I don't even know that he really talks about it, but you kind of hear little snippets here and there about, you know, when it happened, what house it was. And I think eventually it got demolished, but it was somewhere in like Spain or something like that. And he was calling bullshit on everything. And then he got fucked up. Like we're talking scratches and bruises and shit.
It's funny in the in WNUF special, the guy's like, he's treating it, he's a jerk to everybody, and he's treating them like they're idiots. And that you know, it's almost like he gets his comeuppance by the end of it. He's like, yeah, this is some bullshit. Yeah, come on.
That,
you know,
sounds that just like, I swear to God, they based that off of Geraldo Rivera, because he was being a total dick about it. And then he got fucked up, and he thinks that the people were fucking with him. And that's what, and like, they swear up and down they weren't. They probably were, and he probably deserved it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that's hella funny. I'm like, Pixar never happened, bruh. All right. Moving on, I guess, to the acting. Or do we have anything else to say about story?
I mean, let's see. The only thing I would probably say about the story is that I like the compact focus of it. I mean, it's like, it doesn't, it's just like we've been talking about the zombie movies. It's a small story. So you get to like spend time, I mean, with the characters and you get connected to them more. It's not like you're, you know, it's this big sweeping epic or whatever. And I think that kind of helps, because we've had too many of those big grandiose movies with all the Marvel shit and all that anyway.
Yeah,
so
we're over
it's good to have like a smaller story with characters you can connect to, you know, even if the main character is kind of a shit bag whenever it's all said and done.
Yeah, I got an idea. I think the main character is a fucking degenerate piece of shit. I don't think it comes through very good in the movie until like the very, very end. When you start seeing the interaction with the therapist and the girl and how he's just doing it for ratings clout.
Yeah. He's got a lot of charisma up until that point. And they build it up. They try to give you, they try to make you empathetic toward Jack at the beginning, because his wife dying of cancer and how he's the loving husband, how it tore him up and he left his show for so long. They do a good job of endearing him to you until they pull the curtain away and say, no, he actually caused all this and he's a shitbag, you know?
Yeah.
They do a good job with that.
And even then, I think he still does a good job of kind of like brushing it off. Like, no, that's not me. I'm not fucking the therapist, you know?
Well, there's that. It's almost like the demon is trying to reveal his, to him himself, is trying to like pull the curtain down and reveal that, you know, it's like, these are your sins. You have to live with this shit, you know? And he's refusing that. He's like, no, I didn't do any of this. And it's like, the fuck you. And even the critic plays into that, because the critic, I mean, the whole scene with the critic, you know, mass hypnotizing the audience, he's showing you that what you see is not necessarily reality. And yes. So for Delroy, it plays into his end. Like, he doesn't, what he sees as reality is not how things played out. Like, that's all made up, so he feels better in his mind about how they played out.
Now, why do you think that this demon came into his life? You think that was sent to him from the Grove? Or is it just some kind of coincidence? How did this end up happening on the show? Like, it's not discussed. This is just us fucking throwing this shit together.
It could have been premeditated, but he was desperate and he was looking for the Hail Mary.
Yeah, he's looking for those sweep weeks. Okay, so that makes sense. So, but do you think it was destined to happen, though?
Well, here's my question. Was Christo, he obviously was manifesting Madeline, the wife.
Yes.
Was she there to punish Delroy, or was she there to warn him that he was getting ready to be punished? Because it's unclear the way that he says it. It's almost like she's telling him he needs to stop this, that things are going to go badly. But is she saying that from a point of view of like, you need that she wants him to suffer? Is she trying to warn him still as the loving wife? It's like, you are going to pay for your sins if you go down this route.
Yeah,
you know?
She might have been trying to get through the channels, literally, to warn him. And then at the end, I mean, that obviously wasn't really her at the end, but what I don't understand about the ending spoiling coming up real fast was, why did that girl have him kill her? Or was that his wife helping him kill the beast? What happened? What do we think came of that?
I think that was the demon making Delroy kill the girl so that he would have to go to prison, actually suffer something for what he did, even if it was for somebody else, and not what he did to his wife. Because his wife looked, I mean, it was cancer. You can't pin that on somebody, even if it's from a supernatural source.
Yes.
But he directly murdered this young girl. And whenever they go back and play the tape, there is no reason for him to have attacked her because none of that stuff happened in on, you know, in the tape at least, you know. So it was the demon was provoking him to kill the girl, the vessel, so that he would have to, you know, now go and pay, you know, for his crimes.
Yeah, and I wonder why that is, because the demon is the one, well, maybe it's not that demon, but obviously, you know, the Grove, as I like to refer them to, helped him to get to where he was through potentially supernatural and or evil sources. Don't you want your fucking subjects to do well?
Not really. You know how the devil always in those stories will give you something, make you think that you have succeeded and, you know, you sacrificed. So you did what the devil said. You gave up your soul, gave up your loved one, whatever.
Yeah.
And you think you're going to get whatever it is. And then he fucks you over right then because it's like, oh, you're just about to get that. I mean, your ratings are skyrocketing this episode. You're just about to get that famous or, you know, that fame that you always wanted and to beat Johnny Carson. And you did for one night, and now you're going to prison, and you'll never fucking do it again. Well, that's how you got fucked over.
Okay, but tell me if I'm wrong, but wouldn't you want good word of mouth? Like, okay, I played the fiddle against the devil, and I lost, but he still gave me a fiddle of gold, and, like, I'm happy. you want people to want to make a deal with you. You want to be able to be like, yeah, I made a deal with the devil, and everything's great.
People are always going to make deals because people get desperate. That's and the true. Devil doesn't, and the devil doesn't have to worry about, you know, good word of mouth. It's okay. Like, I mean, that's what I took away from it. I don't know. What do you think, Noah? I mean, what do you think that the point of it was?
Like, why was the girl there? Well, other than, you know, he had her on the show for sweeps week and everything, but, like, do you think it was destined to be that way? You think
she I don't know because, like, this is where they would have made a miniseries. It would have filled in a lot of this stuff leading up to that.
Well, they didn't, so this is what's in your head.
I know. I'm just saying, though. Because until you see, like, the very end, but you see those interactions where his wife's getting involved, it seems like she's trying to warn him.
Yeah.
But I don't know either. I don't know.
You got nothing?
No, I was thinking about it, too. I was thinking, well, maybe she didn't know she was going to die or that. And that's the thing. You don't have enough information. You're just basing off what you see, but what you see, how accurate is that?
Well, if she knew she was going, the whole
idea of the movie is to fuck around with what you're actually seeing.
Yeah. If she thought she was going to, which you guys did mention, you're like, okay, we think she kind of knew, she kind of implied that she knew she was dying for a reason and she's doing this because she loves him. It's possible that after death, she still's trying to protect him.
Yeah. Maybe she realized like, This isn't what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
This is going to go way sideways.
Like, you've already lost me. You're about to lose some more shit.
Well, so. I don't think he's even that. She might have just been warning him, like, because I think she wanted him to be successful.
Yeah.
And then she kind of realized, oh, this is going to collapse everything.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think you've nailed it. I think she was trying to warn him, and she saw that he would get the fame, but it would be so fleeting it was not even worth it in the long run.
Yeah. Going to cost him more than he was going to make.
And actually, doesn't that make him famous anyways? Because he's this famous talk show host that killed a kid live on TV. That makes him infamous. Yeah. Like, he's going to be way more in the news, at least, than Johnny Carson for
They're
going to
be talking about him for the rest of fucking time. Hey, you remember that one time that fucking co-host or that show host lost his fucking shit on live on television?
It might nowadays, but back then they could have covered that up hella easy.
Oh yeah, they would have definitely tried to, for sure.
They did. That's why they had to release this documentary.
Mockumentary. It's not real. Okay, acting. Let's go into acting.
I had to change my background to Frank Stewart so you could see the Geraldo Rivera guy.
Fucking dumb.
The acting, Das Malchin carried the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he really did.
They got lucky with him, and I have some trivia about that, too.
I think all the actors that were the main actors did a hell of a good job.
Yeah, everyone kind of stood out in their own way. Like, I loved the sidekick. He was only popping in here and there. The doctor was very convincing in what she was trying to accomplish. The girl was pretty good. She was just weird, and that's what was perfect about it.
You know what she came off like? Taking somebody nowadays that's an influencer or a clout chaser and putting them on TV. To her, it was all about, am I going to get my face on TV?
Yes, it was, 100%. She kept looking at the camera.
She also showed that maybe they are, maybe they're not, romance between her and Jack Delroy, the psychic dead.
Yes.
I mean, the lady who was, you know, the author, because the parapsychologist, because, like, I mean, she, you could tell, I mean, she did a good job of, like, conveying feelings for Jack, but then whenever she saw that he was using that for clout, then she started to say, she started to realize, she's like, I'm endangering this child's life.
Yes.
For you. This is fucked, you know? And then that's whenever she kind of, you know, breaks away from him in that sense.
I like when she has to defend herself in about parapsychology, because that's a fucking thing, too.
Yeah, well, the cynic guy was pretty good, though. Like, he did a good job of, like, knocking everybody's legs out from under him when it came to that stuff.
Yeah, so...
And even Christo, I mean, like, he played the part well of, like, the, you know, John Edward, like, you know, bullshit artist, until he actually, well, and then the stuff afterward with the vomit and everything, he sold that shit. Like, I mean, it's like, oh, this guy's fucked. Like, I don't know what's going on with him right now, but he's messed up.
It would have been nice to see the gore of all the blood coming out of every single orifice.
Is it me, or was there points after he had a little episode that he was, like, talking regularly?
He was for a little bit, but he was sweating at bullets. And that's,
I'm kind of curious if that plays into it more, like Sean was saying. Like, he was a bullshitter all the way through until he actually became possessed. And then when he did, all that showboating he put on about pretending something he's not comes through, and that's kind of when he starts talking regular. Because you have a small window.
You're right. He took away what Noah was saying. He had this persona about him, like he was a mystic from, like, a foreign country or something. Yeah. Until he got really possessed, and then he was talking like a normal guy, like almost like an, just like an American, you know, yeah, like regular American guy. And he was like, this is fucked. Like, I don't, you know, he, like, all pretension went away. Like, there was you know,
they did a good job of making him look sick too.
One thing I was going to say, and I forgot it during the story. Did they ever show what the cameramen were seeing? Because they kept making a point of the cameramen saying, get up to the booth because there's something wrong on, you know, on the playbacks or whatever. And the only thing I could see was that that's Malchin's wife. If you look, yeah, and you had it's blinking, you miss it. Her face was coming through on the static.
Yeah, I forgot about
that. Was
that
what they were talking about, or was it something else they were saying? Because
I think
that's all I ever saw.
That's all I ever saw was his wife. And then sometimes the girl's face would be fucked up.
Okay, because they were running around scared. They were like, something's fucking coming through that is not right on our end, and they just kept making a point of it.
It was two things. The wife was in there, and then, of course, the weird contortion, if you will, of the girl's face at certain spots and everything like that. So, which obviously they had to have that, because they didn't do a lot with her until they turned her into Pumpkinhead and had her head fucking explode, so...
Oh, man, Pumpkinhead's such a good movie.
Anything else we have to say about acting? I mean, everyone literally played their part. They couldn't have done any better on a small-budget film with actors that delivered.
Even the extras, the audience was good.
The audience was good, too.
Yeah, when I think a small independent film, because that's basically with a budget of what? It was $2
million? Less than $2 million.
Yeah, so you're on a small-budget film. I thought the execution was good. You know what this movie is really more than anything? A slow burn that delivers.
Oh, yeah. And I think I did say that. I did tell you it was a slow burn and that I actually liked it.
Yeah, it's the worst is when you get a slow burn and there's no delivery.
Ugh.
It's like, that fucking went shitty.
Or it's a slow burn and it just takes too long to deliver. And then you're like, you're fucking over it.
This movie danced on the fence of too long of delivering.
I watched this back to back with Immaculate, the Sydney Sweeney, like, nun gets pregnant without having sex. Is she giving, you know? And that movie is a slow burn as well, but it builds. That movie builds like nobody's business. Like, when it gets to the end of it, I mean, it is, it's a slight spoiler, but it is screaming at you is all I'm going to say whenever it gets to the end of it. So it's a very, you know, it very much builds up toward the end.
What movie is that?
Immaculate.
Horror movie?
It just came out. It's about this American nun who goes to an Italian convent, and as soon as she starts seeing some weird shit going on in the convent, but then after that, she miraculously turns up pregnant, and they all claim that she's carrying the new Christ or whatever, and stuff starts happening
in theaters, or is it on streaming already?
It was the same time this movie came out. I want to say that it won't be too much longer before it'll be on something streaming.
Yeah.
But it's probably more comparable to the first Omen as far as, like, you know, a nun getting pregnant with, you know, whatever it's she's carrying. But yeah, it was interesting to see both of them, because they both played that slow burn pretty well. Like, I mean, I was pretty happy. I wasn't scared at either one of them. I mean, there was a jump scare in Immaculate that was decent toward the first of the movie, but after that, it was just more of like a tension filled movie. This one I just felt was fun whenever it was going on. I didn't really, outside of the Christo scene when his eyes rolled back, it was the only thing that kind of got me for a second. After that, I was like, okay, I just want to see how this goes. You know?
Yeah, I think there was enough scenes of weird shit going on that it kept me interested, like sparked, like, okay, something can happen. And granted, you know, not a lot did till, you know, the end, obviously. And then at the end, it was, like, so cool to me. So I was just like, okay, well, that happened, and I survived. And I don't know. It just, because it's supposed to be a scary movie, but at the same time, it's supposed to be found footage. So it has to be somewhat realistic. But
horror, not so much. More of, like, a mystery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, a thriller, if you want to go that
route. There you go, yeah.
I think that's the better
one. It was definitely, yeah, I think that's one of the things I said. Like, it's not scary, but I liked it.
You're definitely intrigued to figure out where the story goes.
Oh, yes.
And that's the thing. The movie grabs a hold of you, and it makes you want to figure out what happens.
And the actors are all entertaining enough, going back to the acting before we leave it, that they keep you glued to, mm-hmm. you know, the movie, and, you know, to see how it plays out. I mean, because this movie lives and dies by its actors, because that's really what it's going on. I mean, it didn't have the budget for, you know, the shock and awe of it. So it had to have good actors selling, you know, the entertainment part of it. And they did a pretty good job with it.
What do you think of her name, the girl's name for the fucking demon, Mr. Wriggles? They call him Mr. Wriggles. I'm like, what the fuck?
Wasn't there one of those comedians that used to bash people left and right called Don Wriggles or Rickles? Don Rickles.
Don Rickles, yeah.
That's what I thought of when she said Mr. Wriggles. I'm like, Don Rickles?
Oh,
like,
shit.
He came back?
Don Rickles was like the original roaster, dude.
Oh, my God.
He burnt your ass whenever he said into you. It was bad. Yeah,
all right, moving on to music. I mean, there's no it's an original soundtrack.
Theremin.
Woo! Oh God,
I was laughing, dude, because
I kind of love that though. The theremin is so cheesy, you know.
Oh yeah.
Well, they thought that thing was a shit back in the day when it first came out in the market.
It's kind of cool, not gonna lie.
Oh, it gets used in plenty of music, but it's not the singing icon of the music. It's like it's a background note.
Oh yeah, definitely, and it's especially for spookiness. It definitely has that tone that you need, you know.
I equate it more to sci-fi movies, but yeah, it fits. It's got that eerie quality to it. But it plays into not just the music, but the sound of the movie, because when that theremin starts to go and he can't control it and it's like high pitched, it was even hurting my ears a little bit in the theater.
Yeah.
I was like, you know. So they did a pretty good job with the sound design of the movie that way.
Yeah, I think they did. And also, back then, that had to look fucking insane. Because I'm not sure when that thing came out. It was probably around that time. But, like, how creepy did that look? Like, you're not doing anything. You're not using anything. You're just literally moving your hands. It looks supernatural.
Yeah, it's operating off, like, electromagnetic fluctuations in your skin or something. It's really weird.
Yeah, so I think it fit really well into the movie. But other than that, I mean, the introduction music that I played into the show, I love that song. The Night Owl's theme, if you will.
The theremin came out in 1928.
Holy fuck.
1928.
Yeah, it was named after its inventor, Leon Theremin, who patented it in 1928.
Wow. That's fucking wild.
Yeah.
There's really not much to say about the music. It was noticeable, though, in a good way.
Yeah, it also had... To give it, I mean, to go back to what it is, it's a late 1970s talk show. They played that perfectly because the cheesy intro and outro music before, you know, like leading us like with Jack Delroy, you know, and then like it was playing them. It fed it, it got you in the mindset that you were watching, you know, something from the late or from actually it was the mid 70s or something, like, you know. So.
Yeah. No, I think overall they did a pretty damn good job.
It, you know what made me laugh the most is how they pretend so much, and as soon as the camera goes off, they act exactly like you think they would be.
Oh, yeah. The fucking smiles come off. And
yeah, you're like, oh, fuck. Especially that one guy, the skeptic, that was all about going to the Bohemian Grove. He's like, you know, talk to him. You know, I'd give me an invite. I know you can.
yeah. He was like, I want to get in with these guys. I know they got a lot of pull around here, you know. And it's like, yep, that's exactly how they'd be.
Well, you got a taste of it, sir. How was it? All right. Do we want to go into trivia?
Sure.
There's not a ton. I mean, as we mentioned, this is about to be released in Shudder in literally a week. But by the time this podcast comes out, I think it'll be released a day later. Do we know what day this is being released on Shudder?
I don't. I want to say it was the 15th, but
let's see if it.
Let's see. April 19th.
Okay, April 19th. So we are releasing this. Actually, we're releasing this a week early. Maybe not. Should I release this on the 19th?
I would hold it on the day that it releases. I think that'd be a good day, okay, so that people have a chance to listen or watch it before, you know, before they start claiming, I thought this was the actual movie that I was downloading.
Quit watching our fucking videos on YouTube thinking that we're putting the whole movie out. And I keep saying that this is not the movie. Like, I literally have to put it in the title now. Not the movie.
I don't even know why people would think that, because, I mean, YouTube strikes down videos left and right that actually play the movies. I mean,
oh, big time.
I wonder if you guys can get around this by doing a, I'm not saying to do a Patreon, but if you did, like, you set up like a Patreon, or not even a Patreon, but like a private channel, I think on the private channel, whoever is subscribed, you can invite them and you can watch movies in real time, like on a Friday night.
I'm not sure about that, because even Rain Man, they do that and you can hear the audio of the movie, but they can't actually show. And this is on their private channels. This is for the paid subscribers only.
And I've seen the Dead Pit guys. They will do a fan commentary, but what they tell you to do is they say, we're starting at this point, you know.
And that's what Rain Man does, yeah.
And then when we do, just then start playing the movie and we'll comment.
Yeah, you watch it with it, and then you can hear them riff on it. Yeah,
I'm just curious if you set up a private channel, if you're able to do
it. I'm not trying to risk that, but yeah, a little behind the scenes. We are recording this 2 weeks before they're releasing it, so you will get to hear this on the 19th. And no, we will never be releasing movies on our channel. I apologize. So quit listening to our boring podcast. You made it through the whole thing and decided this was not for you. Thanks for your listen, though.
How many people say that?
All the fucking time. We're getting
boring.
Every time that we get a comment, it's somebody. It's like, I thought I was watching the fucking movie. What the fuck is this?
Okay, how'd that go for you? We did get a good comment today.
I'm not opposed
today
to a fan commentary. No. I think those are fun. But oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, we got a comment today from somebody named John. I'm not sure that they're a follower yet, but they listen to our podcast. And, like, there's no way. Daryl Dixon is one of the best zombie hunters ever, because we were talking about Tallahassee. And I'm like, you're not wrong. Like, Tallahassee is, like, the most badass in his universe of rom-com zom-droms, you know?
I appreciate that comment.
Yes.
I appreciate that comment, and John, I will give you, Daryl Dixon is awesome, but I think that Tallahassee could give him a run for his money. I'm just going to throw it out there.
We got a battle.
You guys are weak, dude. Okay, hold on. So, in your opinion, who's the best zombie hunter, technically?
I would say Daryl Dixon.
Hold on. So what's classified zombie? Anything that's undead.
An infected human.
Ash Williams, okay. If we're going to go that route, we're going to say something dead. It's
that's
gonna be
evil
Ash.
Dead. Those are possessed.
They're undead.
they're vessels that are being used by evil souls.
As undead creatures.
Really? Can they move fast?
Yeah.
That's not a zombie.
What about World War Z?
That's an infected human.
Okay, not Return of the Living Dead.
That's a zombie.
Are they
fast?
Yeah, they're fucking hell running in that movie.
Are running that movie, but that's a different universe. Yeah, Romero doesn't officially recognize.
Yeah, there's a stripper girl that gets all buck naked and has a big ass mouth, and she running around buck naked.
but
yeah, Linnea Quigley that we've mentioned 1,000 times. And her mouth opens up so wide that she could take in probably 40 dicks. Yeah, just saying.
Yeah, lovely bunch of coconuts.
Oh my God. All right, let's go to trivia. You guys are fucking wild. The Carmichael character is very clearly based, including physically, on the real life James Randi. Randi was a talented magician who became a famous psychic debunker, and he started an institute that offered a large reward to anyone that could reproduce their supposed paranormal powers in controlled conditions. Over decades, nobody was able to win the money.
Have you ever watched any of this guy's videos? I've watched a shit ton of them.
For James Randi? Are they good?
Oh, yeah. Because he'll get these guys on there and that do these bullshit tricks, and then he'll control the environment so they can't manipulate it.
Oh.
Like, there was this one guy that could make the paper levitate with his mind. But if you watch the videos, what he would do is blow really hard through his lips, but you couldn't really tell, and it would cause the paper to want to lift, and you'd act like you do with his hand. So the Randi guy would fucking, he controlled the environment to make sure the guy wasn't doing any of that, and he would just fail epically. He's always good at taking all the bullshit factors out of the equation and just having people pull it off.
That's it. That's interesting, because I've never seen this guy's stuff, but I've seen the opposite of this. There was a show on for a while. Stan Lee was over. It was like the amazing, you know, world, you know, things or whatever. And it was like Stan Lee would like show you like, you know, almost magical type things that people could supposedly do. And it's interesting to see the other side of it. It would be interesting. I would like to see Randi go up against the ones that Stan Lee claimed were legit.
The Randi guys was from back in the day, but everybody's posted his videos on YouTube.
Well, he never gave away the money, so he never...
no one could ever duplicate the shit.
You know what? I wonder... I looked, but I did not see it. Remember when I made you watch The Entity?
Ugh, I hate that fucking movie.
And they did a controlled study of her sleeping. They replicated her house, and they did a controlled study, and they were able to kind of get, a frozen bust of the fucking... spirit, allegedly, whatever. That would have been cool if he had been a part of that and was able to fucking bust that shit. Because this was done by college students, and not because they didn't let parapsychologists get involved, because the parapsychologists were afraid that they were the ones making shit up. So they got actual scientists and psychologists involved, and that's when the weird shit happened, and that was in a controlled study that was for The Entity. That would have been cool if he had been involved with that.
That would have been cool. The Stan Lee show was called Superhumans, and he went around the world trying to find people who could do superhuman things.
Okay.
Like, the one episode I remember is he went to, like, a Tibetan monk who could, like, stick nails through his hand and make his hand only bleed on one side. And, you know, it was stuff like that. Ew. You know, it was...
weird.
Guy used the chainsaw on his own self, and it never cut him. You know.
Supposedly. Oh, I've heard about that. Our daughter can get an ear infection, and we won't find out until the doctor sees a double ear infection and thinks that we're child abusers. So that's kind of cool.
That's a superpower.
Gets the parents in trouble, but you know, hey, who are we to tell her what her power should or should not do? actor David Dalmatian was cast in the lead role in the film's central character, Jack Delroy, after film's directors read an article about him about regional horror TV hosts, which he had written for Fangoria magazine. Co-director Colin Cairns said in an interview with the film's two directors published in the magazine, "While I mean, other than sure, just recognizing his awesome work and all the films he's been in, but then I opened up Fangoria, and read an article by David on regional horror hosts, and reading that and knowing his work, I just thought this is going to be a really good fit. Obviously, our hero Jack is a TV host, so it felt like there would be more affinity there." And I think that's hella cool.
Chris Gore has interviewed Das Mauchin a couple of times on Film Threat, and the guy's based as hell, and he's actually a pretty down-to-earth guy and really loves horror movies, so it's pretty cool that he got to be in a few recently.
Exactly, yeah. This horror movie's filmmakers, the Cairns brothers, Colin Cairns and Cameron Cairns, have said that of this picture in an official statement, "In the 70s and 80s, there was something slightly dangerous about late-night TV. Talk shows in particular were a window into some strange adult world. We thought combining that charged, live-to-air atmosphere and the supernatural could make for a uniquely frightening film experience." And you and I have discussed, Reverend, how daytime shows. Well, maybe we haven't. I've heard on podcasts, but I don't know if we've discussed how daytime shows, like think about the Satanic Panic, how that was a thing. A lot of dangerous things happened on TV shows, whether daytime or nighttime, and got people to react in not so good ways.
The 80s Satanic Panic was, I don't know. The only thing I can think of is that it was a reaction to people, and especially in light of recent years. I mean, this is a tangent, but I think it was people kind of recognizing that some of the elite pedophilia stuff was going on.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They didn't, and then it got redirected to Satanists instead of the elites through whatever, you know, how the elites do. They get, you know, people to, you know, control the narrative. And I think that's the reason the Satanic Panic happened, because it was a lot of kids disappearing back in the 80s, and they linked it to Satanists. And I want, and it really, with everything that's came out in the last few years, I want to say that pedophile rings were involved, human traffickers.
Definitely. I think that is a big thing. And I guess if you're the Church of Satan and you're actually against that, which it's funny how the Church of Satan is also against fucking abortions, but that's another topic for another day. But like, if you're a church that is just mocking another, you know, religion of anything, but you do have kind of good values. I don't know if you've seen the shit that the Church of Satan is about. They're actually got legit shit. They don't do human sacrifices. That's got to be fucked up that shit's being placed on you, because you got Catholics that actually do have pedophilia and fucking child SA going on, and they're like, no, fuck this shit. Like, we don't want that shit pinned on us.
What are you talking about? The Pope said that stuff didn't happen back in the day. Okay. What are you talking about?
Yes, our Lord and Savior. A slight tangent, and it is in relation to the Church of Satan. Have you heard of Scott Peterson?
Was that the guy, Lacey Peterson? Yes. His wife disappeared, yeah.
And he allegedly killed her, and, you know, she was pregnant, and he chopped her body up and everything. He was convicted all on circumstantial evidence, and now they're trying to get a retrial because they're like, we think we have proof, you know, we definitely have proof that there's no way he could have made this, like, enacted all of this. But they keep saying, no, 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 let it rest. We don't want to open up old wounds and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, whatever. Because the evidence is fucking shoddy.
It's very shoddy. The reason I'm bringing that up is that in the past, and this was his fucking, this was his lawyer's fault, but they tried to say that the Church of Satan, it was like a group of Satanists that were involved that did it. They had no proof. Granted, there was no actual proof that Scott Peterson done it. It, again, was all circumstantial. But which,
it's a bullshit defense. All you have to do is make the argument that your client didn't do it. Don't try to pin it on fucking somebody
else. And the Church of Satan was so fucking offended. They're like, how dare you? He absolutely did it. And I was like, okay, first off, you're getting mad because he has no proof that y'all were involved. I can get that. I can understand being offended, but you cannot be like, he absolutely did it and you guys don't have proof, so you have to be careful. Well, I feel like nowadays you have to be careful, but back then, nobody gave a shit. You could just throw around fucking accusations all day long.
Well, I mean, obviously, that's how Satanic Panic worked. I mean, it's just like how they do now with woke. It's like, you know, let's see what we can blame on white people today. Back in the day, it was like, let's see what we can blame Satanism on. D&D, movies, music, you know, it was one thing after another back then.
Oh my God. Let me see. Moving on here. In a 2024 interview with the Movable Fest, Colin Cairns explained the reason the film was set in 1977. The film had to happen on a Monday night for sweeps week, so the stakes are high and this is the beginning of the week. That's going to make or break Jack Dalroy's career, right? And it just so happens that 1977 was the only year in the 1970s where Halloween fell on a Monday night, so we thought 77.
That's good.
I get it.
I like that dedication to figuring up events. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like how the Friday the 13th series actually figured up. They generally always figured up a Friday the 13th that would work in whatever year they were doing.
I forgot which one it was, but they got it wrong. Remember, I was checking every Friday the 13th. But
there was one of them that did get it wrong. Yes. But like, even the day that Jason was supposedly born in the 40s or whenever it was a Friday the 13th. Like, yes. They even did that right.
And you know, when Freddy was in space, that Friday the 13th in the future is a fucking Friday the 13th.
Who? Freddy?
Not Freddy, excuse me. Jason in space.
There will be a Freddy in space.
Oh, there will.
Unfortunately.
I mean, that is, planning my wedding on Halloween, that's how I did it. I was like, okay, when can we have a Saturday? 2.5 years, cool. Guess what, Noah? We're getting married on Halloween in 2009 because that's what it's on a Saturday. The church did not like that at all, FYI. That's why we didn't get married in the church. let me see. Fake Americans, and I mentioned this already, with the exception of David Dalmatian and Michael Ironside, who provided the narration. Okay, it was Michael, not his sidekick, who provided the narration at the beginning. The entire cast are Australians playing Americans.
They did a pretty good job. They don't have any Australian accents, so good for them.
I think they did a really good job. Viral marketing. IFC released an excerpt from the fictional program entitled Monster Shock Theater with Martin Monster, featuring Dalmatian doing an in-character interview as Jack Delroy.
I always like that stuff whenever they do like fake, because that's very nostalgic, the monster host or whatever, you know, like the horror host. Like that's the reason that a lot of people still like or, you know, follow Joe Bob Briggs. Yeah. He's like one of the last ones remaining, you know.
Joe Bob Briggs. And what's his sidekick's name? You love her to death.
Darcy the male girl.
Darcy, I didn't ask you.
I'm telling you. I tried to save you, Noah, so you didn't know what her name was.
I'll live.
Till his suspicious death does us part. Anyways, what are our closing thoughts on this? What is our rotting corpses view scores on these?
I mean, I would have to see it more times, but right now I would give it a 4 out of 5. And I think it's a damn fun movie, and it's I've recommended it to people since I've seen it.
Babe,
you know what this movie is? This movie is, it's not a movie you really watch on Halloween, but it's definitely like a movie in the beginning of October you would watch.
Yes.
Halloween season.
It's kind of like an appetizer to Halloween movies.
Spooky season, perfect. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's right around the Halloween season, and in the show, or actually, is it on Halloween? It is on Halloween, huh?
Yeah, it's set on Halloween.
Yeah. So, yeah. Babe, how many rotting corpses out of 5 would you give it?
I give it 4.
Yeah. I hate to agree with you guys all. I'm there too. I mean, I would...
Just don't go into it with the expectation that it's a horror movie.
Yes, definitely do not. It's not a scary movie or...
Unless you're a weenie. I mean, you might get...
you know what? Yeah. You were a wrong metric to gauge movies.
I'm not a wrong metric.
Yeah, you are, because even...
I'm not desensitized as much as you are.
Yeah, you are, because you still watch epic fuck ton of scary movies.
Okay,
with us.
And how did I react to the most recent zombie
Daphne
films?
Daphne would be a better
Daphne, yeah. Correct. But yeah, but she just doesn't watch scary movies. So that's
what I'm saying. She would be a better metric.
Opposite ends of the spectrum. We need someone in the middle that watches scary movies, but I still get scared. So I don't know.
I do with the really, really scary ones, but I mean, that's saying a whole lot. I would imagine that anything that scares me would probably put somebody into, you know, PTSD or something.
Yeah. Well, possession movies, I don't think possession movies bother you guys very much. They usually get to me.
Oh, yeah, they do.
But even with me
She's over there holding her cross and fucking doing the holy.
There we go.
You have no clue how often it's.
Okay, so that being said, wouldn't you say I am the metric for this film?
Yeah, but that's you have a weird like area. Like if it's zombie stuff, it freaks you out, and then when it's like possession, it freaks you out. But if it's like straight up horror movies, you do good on them.
Yeah, because there's gore.
I know, but that's what I'm saying.
There wasn't enough gore in here to keep me as entertained. But anyways, that being said, it is 4 out of 5 for me because it was still a good movie. And me usually being, I'm usually a Weenie Hut Jr. when it comes to possession films. And so it was a very good film. It's definitely Halloween worthy. It's a fun Halloween
movie.
It's
definitely rewatchable.
Yes, it's rewatchable, yes. Which is, that's a no for me. I don't rewatch films. But
yeah, my wife doesn't even do fucking leftovers. Like, oh, that's from another time? Fuck it, throw that away.
I've done you this long.
Yeah, I'm not really leftovers. I keep reinventing myself.
That being said, would it surprise you, babe, that both of my Zombieland reviews, I gave them both 5 out of 5 rotting corpses?
I would give those like a 4-7.
Yeah, they're high up there. Reverend gave them pretty high. I think there were four or five and above for Reverend.
Yeah.
But,
like, those were my first fives out of, what, any movie we reviewed? Have I given anything a five yet?
Did you guys do Return of the Living Dead?
Not yet.
July.
It's one of my
favorites.
July 4th, sir. We have to save it for the holiday that it is intended for.
Yeah, we're pretty good about doing specific holiday movies. And holiday movies for horror do really well, no matter what season we're in. Yeah. So.
All the Return of the Living Dead stuff, I love it.
So,
Especially part three.
Oh, ooh. Yeah, that one's really fucking good.
Is that the one where the girl keeps piercing herself? Yes. And that's where I became obsessed with all the body piercings.
Well, she's piercing herself to control her hunger.
Exactly.
Because they eat in that reality, they eat to numb the pain of being dead and rotting. So when she pierces herself, she is diverting the pain mechanism away slightly.
That's where I decided I wanted to have as many piercings as I had. So
she's a vibe, and she is her and Linnea Quigley from the first movie kind of set my expectations for how women should look, is all I'm going to say. And
my gay cousin liked that pierced zombie in the third one.
Yeah, she was shoving shit through her titty and everything.
Oh, God, I don't know. I apparently have put that out of my mind.
Yeah, she pierces everything.
Everything.
I would like to say that this movie would be a perfect double bill with the WNUF Halloween special, because they are the same thing pretty much.
Yeah.
And watching them back to back would be a nice October event every year.
I need to see if I can find anything on the Geraldo Rivera. Like, even if it's, I swear there might be a little bit of something, but it's so short. And again, it's not anything he ever did again, even though he was going to make it. He had like a contract or something where he was supposed to do X amount of these. And like I said, they fucked him up so bad from the one that he did. He was like offended. Like, I'm never again, you know, whatever. But, so I have to find that. And then I want to watch the WNUF so I can compare, because that's probably what we would have gotten if he had lasted in that house. I think he only made it 3 hours.
The WNUF one is... it's one of those ones that I don't know. I can't qualify. I can't say what it is without spoiling. I mean, I can't say what season it would fall in without spoiling the movie.
Okay.
So I'm going to leave that be. And whenever you see it, then you'll know which season it would go in.
Okay.
But I'll just say this, and this is a minor spoiler. We have already talked about what leads into WNUF Halloween special this episode multiple times. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. I'm not going to say anything. Out loud, I probably would get it wrong anyways, but regardless.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious what it is.
I will say it off air.
Okay, well, we'll end the podcast. All right, Reverend, why don't you close us out?
All right, folks. With that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.